Begin with an article titled, Can This Relationship Work? Tips for Keeping Dogs and Cats Together by Jane Meggett. Some dogs and cats become great friends and really enjoy each other's company. More realistically, many cats and dogs share the same abode, learning to tolerate each other. There are dog people, there are cat people, and there is a substantial number of people who love both canines and felines. If you fall into the latter category, you should prove able to keep dogs and cats under the same roof safely with proper planning and training. A harmonious home. Some dogs and cats become great friends and really enjoy each other's company. More realistically, many dogs and cats sharing the same abode learn to tolerate each other. When your household includes dogs and cats, your goal is a harmonious home where neither species feels threatened or bullied by the other. A harmonious home doesn't happen overnight, but is achievable with most cats and dogs. Compatibility factors. For best results, adopt or acquire a puppy or kitten at about the same time. Canines and felines who start sharing a household before their first birthday usually adjust with the fewest issues. Ideally, introduce a puppy and kitten by the age of 16 weeks. This is peak socialization period for these youngsters. They're both exploring and learning about the world, and they're often happy to make a new little friend. Animals brought together as adults can still do well. If you are adopting a cat or dog, look for one with a prior history of living with the other species. A calm adult dog is probably a better choice for joining a household already containing a cat than a high-energy canine. The right breed. Dogs with high prey drive pose a greater danger to cats than those who don't possess a strong instinct to hunt down and capture prey. Some dog breeds to avoid if you want a cat in the home include Dachshunds, Greyhounds, Huskies, Jack Russell Terriers, Pit Bulls, Weimaraners. In general, Terriers are not good with cats because they were originally bred to kill other smaller creatures. While there is no doubt that individual dogs from breeds with high prey drive may get along with cats, they are the exception. Other dog breeds usually fare pretty well with felines. These include Beagles, Bichon Frises, Bulldogs, Golden Retrievers, Quichons, Papillons, and Pugs. The American Kennel Club recommends dogs from the toy group as cat companions, as well as those from the sporting group. Toys, as the name implies, are bred to serve as loving lap dogs. Most are the same size or smaller than the average cat. The sporting group includes Spaniels, Retrievers, and Setters. These good-natured dogs like to please and make friends, and their sociable nature makes them potential cat buddies. Dogs from the herding group, such as the various types of collies, may get along with felines, but their herding instinct can make a cat's life difficult. While the term herding cats refers to attempts to control the uncontrollable, that won't stop a determined border collie or similar breed. How to introduce your cat to your dog or vice versa. You may want to keep the animals separated for the first few days so that they can get used to each other's scent. Place towels, bedding, or blankets used by the other pet in the areas in which each is confined. When the initial meeting occurs, allow the pets in the same room but keep the dog leashed and let the cat loose. Kitty establishes the tone. Stay calm and let them check out each other without getting too close. Wait until they are basically ignoring each other and separate them again. This is a process you may have to repeat for several days until they show little interest in the other. Even if it seems to get along, do not leave them alone unsupervised for at least a month. You must ensure neither will hurt the other. For peace of mind, you may always want to separate them if no one is home for much of the day. What to consider when adding a cat to your dog household or vice versa. If you already have a dog and are thinking of adding a cat, ensure your canine has basic obedience training. He must know and obey terms such as leave it if he starts annoying Kitty. Cats with claws will defend themselves, and that could mean swiping at the dog's eyes. Keep Kitty's claws trimmed to minimize potential damage. Food can quickly become a source of conflict, so make sure Fido and Fluffy are always fed separately. Give your cat plenty of privacy when it comes to the litter box. Not only are most dogs inordinately fond of litter box deposits, but even if they cannot access the litter box, their presence anywhere near it can intimidate cats. A dog in the home can cause a cat to start eliminating inappropriately, and as the euphemism goes, that is sometimes due to a lack of solitude while conducting this business. Make sure each pet has their own safe space where they can get away from each other. Patience is a virtue. Depending on the pets involved, a dog and cat can learn to tolerate each other right away or the process could take weeks. Sometimes a dog and cat are truly incompatible and you may have to rehome the newer arrival. Most, however, will eventually accept the other's presence with no fuss. You know instinctively when harmony is in the home is achieved. Does your kitty have what it takes to be a therapy cat? People Loving Cats Make Great Therapy Cats by Sandy Robbins. The extensive scientific research endorsing the health benefits of being around felines has boosted interest in therapy cats nationwide. They provide a healing fur fix to those suffering from physical and mental health issues, recovering from surgeries, or experiencing anxiety and even loneliness. Simply put, the job of a therapy cat is to bring joy and happiness. Many hospitals now include pet therapy as part of their treatment plan, while more and more kids' camps and senior residences are inviting them to come and entertain with therapeutic love and purrs. According to Elizabeth Van Every, communications and outreach specialist for Pet Partners, the country's largest pet therapy registry organization, dogs are still the most popular therapy animals because they have the innate qualities that a good therapy animal needs. Although the number of cats with these qualities is lower, we've definitely seen that cats do have the abilities, and our therapy cat handlers are proud of their feline partners. Meet pet therapy cat Casey. More people nationwide have met therapy cat Casey than any other working therapy feline. Apart from cramming lots of personal therapy visits into his schedule, he assists with his cat mom, Arden Moore, where she presents her veterinarian-approved pet first aid CPR classes around the country. He is also the star of Arden's latest book, A Kid's Guide to Cats, giving advice and tips to kids from a cat's point of view. Arden adopted the handsome tabby from the San Diego Humane Society when he was a four-month-old kitten. I was looking for a smart, inquisitive, and confident feline to be my pet safety cat for my Pet First Aid for You program, Arden says. From the moment we met, he accepted being held and playing with a wand toy. I, of course, immediately fell in love with him, and we've been together for 6 years. An owner's guide to a great therapy cat. People loving cats make great therapy cats. Arden says that's no question that Casey loves people. Because he is so social, he likes to meet all types of people and visit all types of places, she says. But I believe his therapy visits with his senior Brookdale buddies are his favorites. When we get ready to head out for a therapy visit, he's inside his carrier in the back seat, and I will say, "Hey, Casey, ready to go visit our Brookdale buddies?" And he will immediately speak in a chirpy tone. He's let many kids at the SPCA of Texas Critter Camp, as well as residents of the Brookdale Memory Care Center in Dallas, walk him on a leash or push his pet stroller down hallways. He always accepts treats gently, never nipping or clawing. To set Casey up for success, Arden socialized him from the start. I purposely touched and pressed his paw pads, handled him from ears to tail, even blew bubbles on his belly, she says. He never reacted angrily or drew out his claws or tried to nip me. He even sits calmly in my lap when it's time for his mani-pedi nail-trimming sessions. She introduced Casey to all types of people and pets from kittenhood, and he never hissed, attacked, or attempted to escape or hide. I often say that Casey has never met a stranger or been in a strange place, Arden says. He adapts quickly to people and situations, a good quality to have to be a therapy cat. Arden also put in extra hours with Casey to ensure that he would come on cue, walk on a leash, ride happily in a pet stroller, sit, greet with a high five, and do a slow spin. Initially, during training sessions, I used clickers and target clicks and gradually was able to fade them out and use my voice and hand signals, she says. She believes it's the little tricks that make a truly endearing therapy cat, as they help people to relax and enjoy being in their presence. Great therapy cat also likes to learn, and it helps if the cat is food motivated. Arden dials it up another notch, ensuring Casey always makes a grand entrance wearing a black cowboy hat and riding proudly in his pet stroller. It sets a fun tone for the visit. Pet therapy registries. All therapy cats need to be registered with an organization such as Love on a Leash, which Casey is registered, or Pet Partners. Apart from the relevant paperwork that covers everything from the pet's health and behaviors, all pets have to undergo a number of supervised visits to ensure that they are right for the job. Further, a therapy feline is required to always be up to date on all necessary health vaccines and flea tick preventatives and get regular wellness exams. Casey had to complete 10 supervised visits, Arden says. We picked the Brookdale Memory Care Center in Dallas. Brookdale supervisor had to verify that Casey behaved politely on each visit. He quickly completed these requirements, all the while purring like a Mack truck. He never shies from being petted, he never hides in his stroller, and he likes to walk on a leash and stop to greet people. I'm blessed to have such a great cat who brings smiles to so many people. Personality traits and cat requirements. Both Love on a Leash, loveonaleash.org, and Pet Partners, petpartners.org, have excellent information about therapy cats and how to go about registering and working with them. They have branches around the country. Apart from a calm demeanor and enjoying being petted, Love on a Leash outlines the following requirements from a prospective therapy cat. Must be open to new experiences, changes in routine, and visiting different places. Must be comfortable in a car and not suffer from motion sickness. Must be at least 1 year old. Pet Partners highlights working with an organization that has a pet therapy partner program that includes benefits such as comprehensive health insurance coverage for both the handler and pet while on volunteer visits, access to tools to help you find places and opportunities to visit, access to relevant online courses available free or at discounted prices, an ID badge with a picture of you and your pet to wear while visiting. If you think you have a feline who's got what it takes to give love and affection to total strangers, consider following some of Arden's cues and register your cat to be an official therapy cat, and it's a great way to give back to your community. Finally on Catster today, we'll read The Cat Headbutt, What Does It Mean and Why Do Cats Do It? By Jane A. Kelly. Ah, the cat headbutt, a most curious form of cat affection and trust. So why do some cats headbutt? Is cat headbutting the same as head pressing? I don't know about you, but one of my favorite feline gestures is the cat headbutt. My own cat, Tara, headbutts me constantly when she's sitting on top of me, and half the time she knocks my glasses off my face when she does it. I don't mind the temporary inconvenience because I know what the cat headbutt means. First, what does a cat headbutt look like? The cat headbutt is not when cats stick their heads into another cat's butt, although that could be another amusing definition. When a cat headbutts, she taps her head against you and rubs her cheeks along whatever body part she's near. Cats also headbutt objects like walls, chairs, and furniture. What does cat headbutting mean? Cats have scent glands all over their bodies, and they use them to leave marks on objects, including you. According to cat behaviorist Pam Johnson Bennett, cat headbutting is typically used for bonding and social purposes. For the cat to place his face so close to yours and engage in this bonding behavior is quite an act of trust, she says. Johnson Bennett also explains that this behavior is more properly called cat bunting. People often inaccurately think that the cat headbutt is just a means of marking territory, but it's a lot more than that. Scent communication is complex, and while cats do use scent to mark their territory, cat bunting can also be used to create familiarity and show respect. Johnson Bennett also says that cat headbutting may be attention-seeking behavior, particularly if your cat butts its head against you and then tucks it down or turns it to the side. Do cats headbutt other cats as well as people? Yes, in fact, you'll often see feline friends rub one another with their heads. Not only does it create the colony scent, it helps with bonding as well. It's a measure of deep trust for another cat to put her head so close to one of her feline companions. So if you see your cat headbutt another cat, know that it means that they're buddies. Cat bunting is also seen in wild cats, so it's something that comes to cats naturally through millennia of evolution. Why do some cats headbutt and others don't? Every cat is different, so don't worry if your cat doesn't headbutt you or fellow felines. There's a lot of variation in the frequency and intensity of the cat headbutt, and there are tons of ways cats show affection. Don't confuse head pressing for headbutting. Head pressing is when a cat presses her head against a wall or piece of furniture relentlessly, often accompanied by abnormal vocalization or other bad behaviors like circling and disorientation. Cat head pressing is a manifestation of a neurological disorder. Specifically, head pressing and the symptoms that go along with it usually are caused by problems with the central nervous system, writes Dr. Eric Barchas. In other words, head pressing occurs when something goes wrong with the brain. Good to know. Now we'll move on to Dogster Magazine, one of my favorite articles, Be Fur Active for the Love of Dogs. Raise a Puppy to be a Guide Dog by Lauren Cadams. Imagine blindfolding yourself and letting your dog lead you down the stairs, out of your house or apartment, around the block and back home. Sounds risky, right? My Chihuahua and I would never make it past the front door without an injury. Guide dogs get extensive training for 5 to 9 months, depending on the organization, to succeed with these tasks. Their guidance helps visually impaired or blind people go to work, navigate busy airports, avoid traffic, and many other unexpected obstacles. How do these dogs get accustomed to so many different scenarios? Most of this work is done before the official guide dog training even starts. At 7 to 8 weeks old, the puppy lives with a foster family, just like yours or mine, called a puppy raiser, which has the job of raising the dog to be socially adaptable, well-mannered, and calm in various situations. We rely pretty heavily on our puppy raisers to get the dogs off to a strong start, says Carrie Lemarise, Program Manager of Puppy Raising at Guiding Eyes for the Blind, based in New York, which has 39 regional centers along the East Coast. Once the puppy turns 14 to 16 months, he graduates and goes into the guide dog training program before being paired with his new life partner. No experience is required to be a puppy raiser. The guide dog organizations provide all guidance and training necessary. All you need is the time, patience, and understanding that you'll eventually say goodbye when your dog graduates. Here, two organizations that train guide dogs for people with vision loss talk about the puppy raiser's responsibilities and how they help change lives for hundreds of visually impaired people each year. Socializing the puppy. Each organization wants a wide range of puppy raisers, from singles to large families to homes with other pets, because that represents the diversity of the clients who will be matched with their service dogs after graduation. We want every type of home imaginable, says Eric Gardell, supervisor of the puppy raiser department at Fidelco Guide Dog Foundation in Bloomfield, Connecticut. Fidelco breeds their own German Shepherd dogs, which are known for loyalty and intelligence. Families are encouraged to expose the dog to as many situations as possible, the very same experiences the dog will be required to handle as a guide dog. This includes taking them through airport security, up and down stairs, to busy restaurants, work, and through grocery stores. The goal is to raise a dog who is unfazed by cats, children, traffic, or tempting buffet tables. The puppy raisers are invaluable, Eric says. They are making the dog that someone else can live with. Training weekly. As dog owners, we want our dogs to have good manners. No excited jumping on neighbors or barking at passing dogs, no digging holes in the backyard, and no chewing on shoes. But for service dogs, obedience skills are necessary for a successful partnership. Our clients have higher needs for good house manners, says Carrie from Guiding Eyes. You might think it's okay if your dog picks up a shoe and moves it, but for our clients, that can mean being late for work. Each family is required to bring their puppies to a weekly training class, and eventually every other week, where obedience skills like nice leash manners, proper vet and groomer etiquette, walking under different leveled underpasses, distraction avoidance, and basic commands are taught. Guiding Eyes breeds Labrador Retrievers because of their trainability, flexibility in different situations, and comfortability around people, Carrie says. Ken Bernhard, a lawyer in Connecticut, is currently fostering his seventh German Shepherd puppy, Gypsy, through Fidelco. He became so inspired by his experience raising his first puppy in 1989, he succeeded in getting a law passed to allow dogs in training to go into public places, and also now serves as the organization's chairman of the board. The hardest part is saying goodbye, he admits, but even so, there isn't a person who would say it wasn't the most rewarding and interesting experience. For this reason, many puppy raisers come back time and time again. Both organizations have families on their 20th puppy. Initially, people come to us because they love dogs, says Carrie, who estimates about 70% of puppy raisers return at least a second time. Then they meet our graduates and becomes a really powerful experience. To learn more about being a puppy raiser, visit fidelco.org and guidingeyes.org, or look for an organization in your region. Some pause for this cause. Each guide dog is free of charge for people with vision loss, but costs organizations $50,000 to breed, train, and support for a lifetime. Monetary contributions are always welcome. Can't commit to a puppy? Other volunteer opportunities are available on-site and from home. Spread awareness. Further the cause by hosting a fundraiser or sharing information on social media. Next, we'll move on to an article from the Work It section. This month, we're going to learn about Daphne, part of this salon's glam squad, by Wendy Newell. One look at Daphne's model-long neck, perfectly poofed pom-poms, and snow-white fur, and you realize that working at her mom's New Jersey European glamour-style salon is exactly where she belongs. Lindsay Barbuto and her husband knew they wanted a dog. He's in law enforcement and was naturally drawn to getting a German Shepherd dog. Lindsay loved shepherds, having grown up with them, but didn't want to deal with the breed's shedding. The couple had two rescue cats at home who already did a good job of getting fur all over the place, and the thought of adding one more to the mix was just too much. After a lot of online research, they found the perfect breed, a standard poodle. Daphne has been part of the family business from the very beginning. She came to Lindsay and her husband from Family Affairs Standards in North Carolina. One of the qualities the couple was looking for in a dog was intelligence, and Daphne is a fine example of her breed. She's a very quick learner. The trainer who worked with Daphne spent more time teaching Lindsay and her husband than the dog. Lindsay knew that in order for Daphne to be able to come to work with her, she would have to be properly socialized. Like most working dogs, Daphne's time as a puppy was spent introducing her to different stimuli, like children and face touching, so that Daphne would react positively to anything that she might come across while at work with her mom. The perfect employee. For Perlet Salon, Daphne is a draw for customers and employees. The French-Italian style of business almost demanded that it have a stunning white standard poodle as a mascot. That was a position that Daphne was more than happy to fill. Daphne has such a personality, she belongs out in the world, her mom says. It was clear to Lindsay that Daphne wanted to be at the salon. Daphne loves the attention and is her pay for the work she does. Having a dog niece is a perk for the people working at the salon. Lissa Carrera, creative stylist, senior colorist, Orbi brand ambassador, and one of the six human employees, believes that the pup is the best part of her workday. Daphne's loving energy and charisma are contagious, she says. She makes us all laugh and truly brings joy to the staff and clientele. Although every once in a while the customer is concerned about being near a dog, something that Lindsay and the salon accommodate as needed, most people are thrilled about the four-legged employee. In fact, Daphne is the reason Miranda Geller first became a client. Miranda saw Daphne on a friend's Instagram page and had to check out for herself. Now she and her six-year-old daughter go to Perle Salon, and Miranda will tell you that a hug from Daphne is everything. Her daughter simply calls the place the Poodle Salon. All in a day's work. Lindsay believes that pets are a great way to calm your nerves and ease anxiety, and is confident it's the job that Daphne loves doing. Every workday, Lindsay grabs her things and asks, "Are you ready to go to work?" That's Daphne's signal. She pops up, goes out the door, and happily jumps in the car. Once at the salon, Daphne runs in, greets everyone to let them know she has arrived, and then gets ready to do her thing. Bring joy, happiness, and cuddles to anyone who walks in the door. Daphne can often be found in the receptionist area, which is her perfect place to say hi to her favorite clients. How do you become one of Daphne's favorite clients? You bring her a puppuccino, of course. Those who have learned this get extra doggy love. The clever pup roams wherever she would like and seems to know intuitively when her mom is busy focusing on a client, and that if Daphne needs anything, she should ask one of her mom's assistants. The gorgeous girl is more than happy to tell you what she wants. You just have to ask. A bark and perhaps some joyful circles translate into yes. Zero response is no. The day is over and it's time to go to bed. Daphne sleeps in between her two humans. At first, her dad wasn't sure if he was going to be fully on board with such feminine beauty. He's now obsessed with Daphne and she with him. Lindsay even thinks he enjoys the extra attention he gets as a big athletic man wanting a fancy poodle. Lindsay has fallen madly in love with the breed and doesn't believe she will ever have any other for the rest of her life. If you ask her what she thinks about her coworker, she will happily confess, "She's honestly my best friend. Working dogs are just like us." Do you groom Daphne yourself or do you take her to a professional dog groomer? Daphne gets professionally groomed every 3 weeks at Planet Poodle in Red Bank, New Jersey. If Daphne had a superpower, what would it be and why? The ability to transform to dog to human and back to dog at any moment. Daphne is the biggest people person I know. Her favorite thing is to give hugs. She's a hugger. What gear does Daphne use? Daphne is always dressed to reflect the seasons, sweaters in the winter, for example. She also has bows to reflect the season and colors and holidays. At Perle Salon, Daphne drinks from a bowl I made in ceramics class with a handcrafted dog paw print. Clients are always giving her toys, for which Daphne is very appreciative. Does Daphne have any nicknames? And if so, what and why? Daph for short. Clients, friends, and family just call her Daphne. What is Daphne's diet? Daphne is strictly on a rye diet that consists of Stella and Chewy's dehydrated beef patties. She also gets salmon Trader Joe's treats. What is the weirdest or funniest thing Daphne does? She tries to jump in the shampoo sink to drink water. Looks like she's trying to have a wash. We call it shampoodles at Perle. She always tilts her head when spoken to, like she's reading your lips. And finally, today we'll end today's episode with WAGS, Explore the Museum of the Dog by Philip Milner. There's a social media post by Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel where they had pictures of what dogs they thought they looked like, says Alan Fausel, the executive director of the American Kennel Club's Museum of the Dog in Manhattan, New York City. So I took both of their pictures and I put them into our interactive Find Your Match machine, which uses facial recognition technology to tell you what dog you look like. Alan reveals that singer Timberlake came out as a Yorkshire Terrier and the actress Biel was cast as a Border Terrier. Decades before the days of assigning dog breeds to celebrities, the Museum of Dog was founded back in 1982 with the goal of celebrating the role of dogs in society and educating about the benefits of the human-canine bond. After relocating to St. Louis, Missouri in 1987, where the museum ran for 32 years, a decision was made to return the establishment to New York City in 2019, a move that prompted a transformation from an analog institution into a more cutting-edge organization that embraces virtual technology and interactive experiences. The quote I've used is, "We're taking it from a Ford Model T car to a spaceship," says Alan, who formerly worked at the auction house Doyle, where he came to deal with dog and cat-centric artworks. He adds that the museum is proud of the way it integrates digital kiosks, including one where visitors can learn to train a virtual dog, With the traditional foundation of a 4,000-volume library of historical dog books and a 1,700-piece collection of canine art and artifacts. Don't miss these. One of the Museum of the Dog's most revered historical displays is a 30-million-year-old fossil of an ancient dog called the Hesperison, which is now extinct. Today it would look more like a meerkat or a mongoose, Alan says. Pride of place goes to the skeleton of Belgrave Joe, a fox terrier who prospered in the late 19th century. He was a very prolific breeder, and they sort of called him the Abraham of his breed, Alan explains. They say that before Belgrave Joe, there were terriers that chased foxes, and after him, there were fox terriers. Know the dog. Allowing visitors to gain an insight into the history of various dog breeds while gaining a better understanding of the animal's role in modern society is a key part of the museum's focus. There are purpose-bred dogs, and they have jobs, and they take it seriously, says Alan, who has a 2-year-old Welsh Springer Spaniel called Gemma. It's about knowing what those dogs' tendencies are and what they want to do. They're effectively looking to you as the alpha member of the pack. After a reflective pause, Alan adds, you learn a whole lot about the history of dogs and why they look the way they look and act the way they act. For more info, you can visit museumofthedog.org. We'll finish with a little bit of health talk by Jackie Brown. So the oldest known golden celebrates 20 years. One of Goldheart Golden Retriever's rescues, adoptees, recently made headlines when she reached a milestone birthday. August, affectionately known as Augie, turned 20 years old in April, making her the oldest ever golden retriever in the rescue group. The average lifespan for a golden retriever is usually 10 to 12 years, though some goldens live into their teens. Augie, who was adopted by her current owners at the age of 14, celebrated her special day with a dog-friendly carrot cake and time with her golden retriever siblings, Belle, Bruce, and Sherman. So pet fostering sees a bump. It seems that the COVID-19 pandemic had at least one positive outcome. Many shelters found themselves emptied as homebound pet lovers stepped up to adopt and foster pets. Fostering especially saw a big uptick, with many people fostering pets for the first time, but hopefully not last. Best Friends Animal Society conducted a survey of 321 participants who fostered pets during COVID-19 quarantine and discovered the following. 43% were fostering for the first time, 75% were extremely satisfied with their fostering experience, 95% facilitated an adoption, and 80% think the greatest impact of fostering is expanding the capacity to save lives. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. All About Pets is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.